Greetings, and welcome to the first quarter earnings conference call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the one followed by the four on your telephone. If at any time during the conference you need to reach an operator, please press star zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Thursday, May 9th, 2019. I would now like to turn the conference over to Marie-Annick Bonneau. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our first quarter conference call. All our Q1 documents, including press release, slides for this conference call, MD&A, and supplementary information package are posted in the Investor Relations section of our website at ia.ca. This conference call is open to the financial community, the media, and the public. I remind you that the question period is reserved for financial analysts. A recording of this call will be available for 1 week starting this evening. The archive webcast will be available for 90 days, and a transcript will be available on our website in the next week. I draw your attention to the forward-looking statements at the end of the slide package. A detailed discussion of the company's risk is provided in our 2018 MD&A, available on SEDAR and on our website. I will now turn the call over to Denis Ricard, President and CEO.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for being with us today. First, I'd like to go around the table and introduce everyone. Jacques Potvin, Chief Actuary and CFO. René Laflamme, in charge of individual insurance and annuities. Carl Mostas, responsible of our mutual fund business and distribution affiliates. Normand Pépin, Executive Vice President and Assistant to the President. Michel Tremblay, Chief Investment Officer. Mike Stickney, in charge of our U.S. operations. Sean O'Brien, in charge of our dealer services and of IE Auto and Home. And Martin Bélanger, responsible for our group businesses. Today is the last conference call for Normand and Michel, who will both be retiring during the second quarter. On behalf of the board and management, I want to thank them for their respective contribution to the success and development of IE. Now, with the results. Globally, we are pleased with the first quarter, which is in line with guidance and with our long-term growth objective. I will first comment on business growth in our different lines of business. Please refer to slide 4. Starting with individual insurance, sales of $41 million in Canada were lower than last year, partly due to a decline in excess premiums. Minimum premiums also decreased, but were generally within expectations. Our distribution networks continued to be active, as shown by the year-over-year increase of policies sold during the quarter. On the individual wealth side, in the context of a difficult RRSP season for the industry, we are quite pleased to post positive total net flows for the first quarter. While the mutual fund business remained challenging, the results coming from our affiliates were positive. On the seg fund side, gross fund sales of more than $610 million were similar to same quarter last year, which is a very solid result. This allowed us to rank number one for net sales and second for gross sales. Now moving to group businesses, where all divisions posted solid growth. Employee plan sales were up by 33% and group savings and retirement by 26%. As for dealer services sales, they increased by 7%. The increase came mostly from PNC products and car loan origination. Special market solutions sales were also quite good, with a growth of 13%. Overall, we recorded double-digit sales growth in our group businesses, and it was as strong with our U.S. operations. Indeed, we are also very satisfied with the growth of our U.S. divisions. Individual insurance sales grew by 11%, and dealer services sales by 25%. With such a strong momentum, we will continue to focus on the U.S. in our growth strategy and to look for opportunities to increase our presence in these markets. I will conclude on business growth with two important metrics, premium and deposits and assets, which both posted year-over-year growth. Net premiums and deposits continued to increase during the first quarter and were 2% higher, while assets under management and administration were 4% higher. Another important metric is the book value per share, and by generating a 10% growth of the book value per share over the last 12 months, we demonstrated again our ability to create value. I will end my introduction comments with a few words on financial strength. As you may know, I pay a lot of attention to our balance sheet, and I am quite pleased with our overall situation. As Jacques will explain in further details, we continue to have a very comfortable financial position, which allowed us to pursue our buyback program and to increase by more than 8% our quarterly dividend to common shareholders. On that note, I'll now pass it over to Jacques to comment on our Q1 profit.
Thank you, Denis, and good morning, everyone. In terms of profitability, we are satisfied with the results of the first quarter, which are globally as expected. As you can see on slide 5, reported EPS of $1.40 was better than expected and 9% higher than Q1 last year. Core EPS of $1.28 is within guidance, near the midpoint of the target range. It is less than Q1 last year, but as you may remember, core EPS of Q1 2018 was particularly good due to mainly to positive policyholder experience in many lines of business. Reported and core ROE at respectively 12.4% and 12% are strong and in the higher end of guidance. Items of note appear on slide 6. At 24%, the effective tax rate was higher than expected and impacted negatively our earnings by 5 cents. Policyholder experience, which I will comment in a moment, was also unfavorable by 4 cents. On the positive side, in addition to market-related gains, strain and income on capital were better than expected. Slide 7 presents policyholder experience by lines of business, excluding market impact. We report an experience loss of 6 cents per share in individual insurance. This comes mainly from mortality and morbidity experience and higher expenses. Results of our group businesses and U.S. operations were solid and represent a total gain of 3 cents per share. Despite a hard winter, IA Auto and Home also posted positive results and contributed to the positive income on capital by 2 cents. Moving on to capital, please refer to slides 9 and 10. As you can see, we continue to have a very comfortable capital position. Our solvency ratio of 124% is well above our 110-116 target range and higher than 12 months ago. Buyback of 1.8 million shares, implementation of IFRS 16, and the narrowing of credit spread explain the decrease from Q4. In view of the macroeconomic variations that occurred during the first quarter, our solvency ratio reacted consistently with sensitivity vectors provided last quarter. Our leverage ratio is relatively low at 21.3% and should be lower by about 3% when we redeem debentures in May, as already announced in April. When we consider our solvency ratio, our capacity to generate capital organically, and our leverage ratio, we have a very solid balance sheet with good capital flexibility. Finally, last month, among other changes, the Actuarial Standard Board decreased the long-term URR by 15 bps. As a reminder, we are already properly positioned in respect of the new promulgated rate. This concludes my comments. Operator, we will now take questions.
Thank you. If you would like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. One moment, please, for the first question. Our first question coming from the line of Meny Grauman with Cormark Securities. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good afternoon. You talked about the further deleveraging from an already low leverage ratio. So I'm just wondering, you know, at what point do you view the leverage ratios as being too low, or what can we expect here in terms of sort of a sustainable leverage ratio over the next year or 2 years?
Yeah, it's Denis here. Actually, you know, we have not done the exercise of, you know, defining exactly where is the point where we believe it's going to be too low. Obviously, the optimization of our capital position is key. I think it's a balance between, you know, the level of growth that we can get from acquisition in the future, you know, the expectation of what we can do. And we always like to have the idea of having some margin to maneuver with the low ratio. But, you know, it's too early to tell right now what would be the level at which, you know, we were going to say this is too low.
I guess putting it another way, is this a reflection that you're maybe getting a little bit more concerned about the risk environment? Can we read into this continuing deleveraging a sign that you feel you have to be more defensive in nature?
I don't know. I don't think you should read that. You should rather read that, you know, we have more munition for growth.
And if I could just ask another question in terms of the P&C business, seeing the results in Q1, but we know that there were significant weather events, I guess, still ongoing in Q2. So I'm just wondering if you could give us any guidance on what your claims experience is right now for Q2, given the flooding, and what kind of outlook do you see for that business, given the natural disasters currently happening?
Yeah, this is Sean O'Brien. So we are seeing higher claims in Q2 related to that. But our current outlook is that we're still going to be able to be on plan for the year. So the current experience is probably about a -2 for the quarter that we've seen so far, -2 cents.
Thanks for that.
Thank you. Our next question coming from the line of Gabriel Dechaine with National Bank Financial. Please proceed with your question.
Just to clarify that -2 cents, you're talking about the current quarter impact of Quebec floods?
Yes, that's correct.
Gotcha. Okay, first question is on the, first real question, on individual wealth. So earnings growth was negative year on year, and we get that. You had a weak starting point from what Marcus did at the end of last year. I'm just wondering if there's a way to quantify how you're positioned vis-a-vis the guidance that you gave for this year for the wealth business. It was supposed to be a drag on earnings, but given what markets did during the quarter, they were very strong. Are we possibly ahead of plan there? It's hard to kind of figure that out.
Thank you, Gabriel. Jacques speaking. For sure, it's a positive for us. So in addition, with all the initiatives we're working on, we are really confident in delivering our 10% growth and perhaps above.
Okay, so the wealth, just if you can confirm that the wealth outlook is probably tracking ahead of plan.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. My next question is about individual insurance, where we had the negative experience loss during the quarter. I mean, I don't want to dwell too much on the quarter, but a couple things. One, the expense experience was the bigger component of that loss. I thought expense management was going to be a positive driver of growth this year. Then second, on a maybe a more extended period, if we look at that business, excluding market impacts, it's been pretty volatile. We saw earnings growth down 26% 2017, up 15% this past year, 2018, and now we're down 2% in Q1. That's excluding the market impact on the UL business, by the way. I'm just wondering, is there an internal view on how volatile that business has been and has become, and what you're possibly going to do about it?
Doug speaking. When we prepare the expected profit, you know, when we look at experience gain and loss, you have all ways to factor in the expected profit as well. Mm-hmm. And every year, we don't have crystal balls, so what we do is our best to give our best shot in regards of expected profit, and after that, the experience materialized during the year, creating gain and loss. When I look at the first quarter and the recent quarter, I don't see any trends here that makes me uncomfortable with our guidance for the year.
Okay. Maybe we'll follow that up at a later date. My last one is just the tax item, the 5 cents. Is that truly a one-off? Because it sounds like it was attributed to being a multinational corporation, which, well, you are, and that's not changing anytime soon. Can you explain that one a little bit more?
Jacques speaking again. It's related to the Canadian investment fund that brings volatility to the results. The company status as a multinational insurer has resulted in a higher than expected taxation of foreign investment assets. Part of the loss is related to the macroeconomic variation we had during the quarter. What I can add to that is the new structure we will implement will reduce that volatility of the CIF element. And I'm quite confident that for the year, our guidance, I didn't change the guidance because I still believe our guidance will be good for the year.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question coming from the line of Sumit Malhotra with Scotiabank. Please proceed with your question.
Thanks. Good morning. Probably start with Denny, and I want to make sure I captured all of the expense commentary that Gabe was getting at. If we go back to some of the conversations we've had, Denny, you've talked about IA needing to be smarter in terms of how the company thinks about and allocates the technology spend, and you had given us a number somewhere in the $80 million range. So when we see the expense experience being negative in individual insurance, is it appropriate to think about that related to any project or technology spend, or was this a little bit more specific than that in terms of the start to 2019?
No, you're absolutely right, Sumit. It's based on all the initiatives that we're having, and as you mentioned, we have invested significantly in improving our different platforms, and technology has been a key theme here. So you're right. But on the other hand, you also have to know that, there's a bit of timing issue here in terms of the expense, so that some of these expenses, you should not see, I would say, these losses, being a recurring event during the year. In fact, we believe that there may be some recovery even at the end of the year.
All right. So it's basically... To be formulaic about it, you bake in some level of investment spend, and in any given quarter it could be higher or lower, and that's obviously going to drive what you report to us in terms of experience.
You're correct.
All right, so that's more back
maybe,
and forth, we'll call it.
Maybe Jacques would like to add some flavor on that.
The only thing I will add on that, we have to remember that the expected, we factored in some synergies there. In the expected profit
from the acquisitions, or when you say synergies?
No. If you remember what we said at our Investor Day, investment in technologies, and there will be expense synergies in our different line of business. So it has been taken into account in our expected profit. That's the only point I wanted to add.
No, I hear you there. And maybe Jacques, while you're there, let's stay with you on slide 10. So you've given us this capital flexibility number or bullet over the last few quarters, and you put the number out there of potential capital deployment of $1.1 billion. Can you just remind me in terms of your key levers, your solvency ratio and your leverage, what are you contemplating in that $1.1 billion estimate?
What we have here to consider is all the different constraints. There are some constraints in regards of Tier 2, as a percentage of Tier 1, limitation of the pref share part, as well as the core ratio. So that $1.1 billion is really it's the capital we can deploy and making sure that we're respecting all those different metrics.
So I'm guessing you'd go to the low end of your LICAT ratio target range, and what would be the constraint on leverage?
The leverage, we increase it to close to 30%. In regards of the ratio, it will be 116, not the bottom range of our range. It's really the top range. The core ratio is a constraint that is hurting us a little bit more on that.
Okay, so 116-ish on LICAT and all the way up to 30 for leverage would get you that full number.
Yeah.
All right, last one for me, and probably back to Denis for this. You know, one of the interesting disclosures you had given us at Investor Day was in thinking about the growth targets you'd laid out. One area we should put more weight into than perhaps we have in the past is some of the investments you've made in distribution. I know this quarter there was a reference to PPI fee income being a bit lower. So again, maybe not to focus just on one quarter, but when we think about Hollis, PPI, ABEX, these distribution investments you've made, what's the best way, in your opinion, for the market to track your progress on how distribution acquisitions or investments from IA are proceeding towards the growth objectives you've communicated to us?
Well, if I look at one KPI, is the expected profit on in-force. This is where we embedded the various results of those acquisitions. So that would be my answer.
All total company expected profit.
Well, if you talk about wealth management, for example, if you look at the EPIF, expected profit of in-force of the wealth management, and on the life side, it would include PPI.
All right. We'll stay on top of that. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Our next question coming from the line of Doug Young with Desjardins Capital Markets. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning. Just maybe, Jacques, to clarify that tax item of 5 cents, I guess I wasn't crystal clear. Is that and just an unusual item that won't recur, or is that something that could recur in a few quarters but then is going to actually, as you make some adjustments, is actually going to move down? I just wasn't crystal clear on that.
The best way, Doug, to answer that will be to say that I still believe we will meet our guidance for the year, but there will be some volatility. So the CIF is bringing some volatility there, depending on many, many different factors. So it's quite difficult to completely predict. And like I said, our evolution to the new structure with the ALCO will help to reduce the volatility going forward, but we won't be there. I expect to be there by the end of fourth quarter or beginning of next year.
Okay, so it's going to stay, but basically you're making some adjustments, and some of your already adjustments you've made should help you reduce that impact over the next year. Is that fair characterization?
Could you repeat, please?
Well, I'm just wondering, the tax item's going to continue to be there, but you've made some adjustments around the holdco structure and some other changes that should help you alleviate that pressure over the next year.
Like I said, the holdco structure will materialize more in Q4 or Q1 2020. So we will expect to continue to have some volatility, but overall for the year, we expect that we will be within our tax guidance.
Okay. And maybe on to the mortality and morbidity in the individual insurance. Can you just unpack exactly what that related to?
It's our life insurance block of business. Actually, last year, we had three positive quarters, one negative quarter. Overall, it was a 3-cent gain. The first quarter this year started negatively, but it's volatility. So I don't see any trend here yet.
And that's on mortality and morbidity?
It's on mortality mainly.
And what's the morbidity?
Negligible.
Okay.
Disability and critical illness exposure.
Okay. And then just you had unfavorable experience in the P&C products was mentioned in dealer services. Is that related to extended warranty? It's the first time I think I've seen that. Maybe I missed it otherwise, but just hoping to get a sense of what actually occurred there.
No, this is Sean. That was it was related to our replacement insurance policy in the first couple of months, and we expect it won't be reoccurring.
Replacement insurance mean residual value? Is that?
No, it's a policy that covers sort of after an accident, covers sort of bringing you back to the an OEM product. Very popular in Quebec.
Okay. I know. I got that. Okay. That's it for me. I will leave it there. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question coming from the line of Thomas MacKinnon with BMO Capital Markets. Please proceed with your question.
Yeah, thanks. A couple questions here. Just wondering as we kind of move into potential actuarial assumption review, if there's anything that you might be able to share with us. And in particular with respect to the IRR, I think we've got, as you show on slide 19, you talk about 42 beeps of protection over, and I guess that's over the Canadian 30-year rate at December 31. We do have a Canadian 30-year rate now and of 192, so based on my math, if we went below 176, have you kind of run out of protection here? And you would have to start beefing up the IRR or beefing up reserves for the IRR?
Thank you for the question, Tom. Like any other years, IA is doing management actions to manage the interest rate exposure to make sure that we can concentrate on the long-term view, the management of that line of business with a long-term view. So it's the same in the first quarter this year. We did some management actions, so I don't have any pressure whatsoever. I have that margin has been replenished, and we are very well positioned. And in regards of year-end business change, if the current interest rates stay at that level, I have the power to cover that.
So why do you put in this 42 beeps of protection? Because from what you're telling me, you've got management actions to help you, even if you did go beyond this 42 basis points of protection?
Tom, we've always presented that protection. We work with it during it evolved during the year. We've never provided that number except for the protection at the end of the year. That's where we want to make sure that our reserves are well positioned. We always have a prudent approach, and during the year it increases. Increase and we use that margin to manage the reserve change during Q4. That's the way we've been working, and we will continue to work that way. But presenting a number will be very complex.
Okay, so I think what you're saying is if I take 42 beeps off the 218 that we start, that was December 31, that's 176. Even though we're at, even if we went below that, you still have management actions to cover yourself?
Exactly, you're totally right, Tom.
Okay, thanks. Then with respect to CTL, the non-prime finance receivables, they are they're up 8% quarter over quarter to $572 million, and they've gone up 50% year over year. Do you have any kind of internal threshold? I know that you know, the credit losses remain pretty comfortable with respect to this business, but is there any kind of help us feel comfortable with this kind of growth in this business?
So this is Sean O'Brien. The we have a limit set at 750, or a review line set at 750 million, and we expect to probably hit that in 2020. And the growth we're seeing this year is on plan. What we are seeing is, though, the industry is growing in total. So although new car sales are down, there are more non-prime applications coming through the market. So we're kind of benefiting from an industry growth in that area.
Okay, and so what happens at 750? Do you have an internal review and you say, yeah, business is good, let's just keep our pedal on the gas here, or foot on the gas, or what? Help us understand what would happen in this review.
Yeah, we would review the growth we've had, and the growth we're seeing is very measured growth. We're actually continuing to take more near prime business and better credit, and the incoming application volume we're seeing is reflecting that. So we take a look at the mix of business, and if we're comfortable with it, move ahead.
Okay, thanks for the color.
Thank you. As a reminder, to register for a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4. Our next question coming from the line of Mario Mendonca with TD Securities. Please proceed with your question.
Good afternoon. Jacques, can we go back to the explanation you offered to one of the questions? I think it was Gabe's question. You said it's appropriate to look at expected profit and experience gains together. Now, I fully understand that's something I've done for some time now. When I take a look at that and I exclude market related experience gains, because I want a cleaner look at the underlying business here. The observations are fairly clear. Over the last two quarters, the sum of experience gains, so non-market experience gains and expected profit, you look at that year over year, it's deteriorating. It was down, say, 8% in Q4 18, down another 6% in Q1 18 year over year. Can you help me understand, like, what are we seeing here? Is the individual insurance business just becoming structurally less profitable? And if so, what are some of the reasons for this?
I don't believe that the line of business is becoming less profitable. The business grow, our PFAD are still well positioned. Experience, there will be some volatility in from 1 year to the other. What I wanted to answer to Gabriel was mainly the fact that when we want to look at the volatility, we should look at everything like what you mentioned. But I'm fairly confident that my assumptions are very well positioned, that we have the good PFAD in place to face what is coming. So that's the way I'm looking at it.
Okay, so I looked at over the last two quarters, and admittedly that's a fairly short period of time. So I also looked at it over a long period of time. I looked at 2018 relative to all of 17, and that's where you see the growth still emerging. So is that what you would advise us to do, not to focus on these two quarters, but just take a nice long-term approach? And because on a longer-term basis, the sum of expected profit, non-macro, and experience, I'm sorry, expected profit and non-macro experience is still positive. Is that where you'd guide me?
Exactly, Mario. You're very good at explaining it. I'm always looking at that line of business. Our commitment to policyholder will mature on average in 40 years. So the way we manage that business, it's with a long-term view. It's always that way we look at it, and there will be some volatility from one quarter to the other, but we need to manage that business with the long-term view.
Okay. Now, on the tax thing, and just the tax thing throws me off a little bit. The company's been multinational for some time, but you say, Jacques, that that there was greater volatility, and that's what sort of triggered the higher taxes. Is that how you described it?
Yes. However, our project to going to the OLCO structure is to give us more room to so that we are less exposed to that volatility. But we're not there yet. So what we're seeing here is really what we were expecting in regards of the fact that the magnitude of the volatility could be higher. That's why we're moving to the OLCO structure. And I would say that the big part of the volatility is coming from the different market variation that will happen on those asset classes. There are assets that are in the international fund, assets in the Canadian fund, and both of them will work differently from one quarter to the other quarter, and that brings the volatility.
Okay. So when you say you're comfortable with where the tax guidance is now, but you won't have a more permanent solution until much later, can I just read between the lines and take that to mean there just could be some unusual tax gains emerging over the next few quarters that offset the higher tax rate? Is that about right?
You know, with tax, we can say it that way. I tend to look at the core on a yearly basis. So on that one, it's like that for our budget, the tax guidance, we look at it on an annual basis, taking into account that we will have the OLCO structure, and that OLCO structure will help to reverse some of the things that we've seen in Q1. So that's the way I'm looking at it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question coming from the line of Scott Chan with Canaccord Genuity. Please proceed with your question.
Thanks very much. Maybe going back to Sean on the car loans on slide 16. Can you remind me why the average loss rate has declined since CTL? Is it the mix of business or seasoning, or is it something else?
Yeah, the gradual decline we've been seeing reflects the better mix of business we've been seeing. So moving more from non-prime when CTL sort of started to near prime in today's market. And it has started to stabilize, so you can see the sort of the loss number in Q1 at starting to show a bit of seasonality popping in, but it's right where we want it.
And could you share perhaps a proportion of what's non-prime and what's near prime in that portfolio right now?
It's hard to draw the mix of the line, but our top two sort of categories, we call them gears, represent 60% of our business.
Gears is non-prime?
Yeah, well, it's just it's a risk tier, I guess you'd call it. Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question coming from the line of Darko Mihelic with RBC Capital Markets. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, thank you. Just first a clarification, and maybe if you can also provide some color. When I look at the sales numbers in individual insurance for Canada, I think in the beginning of the commentary, you suggested that some of the decline was expected. Can you provide a little more color on why that is? But more importantly, what is your outlook for sales, and are you doing anything on the sales side that would suggest that sales should be better for the rest of the year?
Hi, this is Renee speaking. So, of course, we're not pleased with the results from 46 million to 41 million this quarter over quarter. As Denis mentioned, most of this variation comes from the excess premium. The minimum premium, we're striving to get 5% growth. What was said is not so far from what we're looking at, but we're minus 5%. We certainly want to move back to plus 5% for the year. We certainly have initiatives, and I will summarize that in threefold actions on distributions, on product, and on technology. Those initiatives, you will start seeing some effect in Q3 and full effect in Q4 and beyond in 2020. So I don't know if that answers your question.
So it suggests that really we should be expecting stronger sales starting Q3 and Q4. And I guess the other side of the question is, you know, is there something going on in the marketplace with respect to pricing that we're seeing from competitors, or is it something that's happening purely on the distribution side?
In terms of, there's nothing specific on pricing. Distribution is always important. There are, you know, different product, different aspect, technology, and distribution. So that's why we have all those initiatives on the threefold that I've said before.
Okay, fair enough. So the current level of sales is something, let's say, we should consider for Q2, and then thereafter we should see a bump once your initiatives start to take hold. Is that a good way to think of it?
It's a fair statement.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Monsieur Ricard, there are no further questions at this time. I will now turn the call back to you. Please continue with your presentation or closing remarks.
Okay. Thank you very much. As you've seen here, we've the quarter, as there's three things I'd like to talk about in the quarters. The first one is in terms of profitability, you know, it's the 10% expected profit in force increase. We're pretty pleased with that. We like the 10% number because at the end of the day, you know, we also had that number for the book value increase for the year. So that's been quite positive. On the sales side, there are some, you know, very good spot, very bright spot, like the U.S. is one of them. We're very pleased with that that growth. And obviously, there are areas to improve. It was, you know, identified in the call. And keep in mind that in the past, this organization has been able to identify quickly where is it that, you know, it needs to improve and make the necessary steps to improve it. We've seen that, you know, recently with IOTO and Home and Group. So that's my second point, sales. Very confident that, you know, we can bring that back up. And lastly, capital generation. You've seen it in the quarter. We are delivering on our capital generation objective. So with that, I'll leave it to it's done. Okay. So thank you very much.
Thank you. That does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your line.